This is RSBNB Update, episode 608, recorded Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. Penguins in the Kelvin Timeline. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Quest Week once again here at RSBNB Update. We always love Quest Weeks, don't we, Sirion?
Woohoo!
You remember the last Quest Week you were on?
That was Sliska's Endgame. Oh, I still shudder at the thought of those mazes.
All right, and also joining us is Sira Pyro. You've been on the podcast once or twice before. And is also the head of low council at Coin Quest. Welcome.
Hello.
And he also keeps great databases. Isn't that right?
If you say so.
Yeah, I've seen your data. It's very nice. But anyways, that's not what we're here to talk about. Back to the Freezer, the Penguin Quest that was a surprise to everyone this week. You know, we all had our theories going into this about what quest line it would be. Did anyone guess Penguin?
I thought it was a possibility. I was kind of expecting, like, Gnome or Pirate.
But yeah, I included it in my guesses as well. So I'm not terribly surprised. And
Yeah, it's definitely going back. Let's see, when did Some Like It Cold come out? Does anyone remember off the bat?
I think it was 2012.
All right, let's just have a look-see here. Some Like It Cold followed Red Racktober, and you would be right, August 2012. So 5 years, almost 5 years since the last Penguin Quest came out. And this one required, of course, 50 divination, 45 runecrafting, and 37 slayer. Obviously, the 37 slayer involved to kill killer watts, runecrafting for a bit of rune magic in the quest, and divination, well, that was kind of shoehorned in, but we'll get to that in just a little bit in the overview. So before I start running through the storyline here, anything you guys want to say about this quest? Maybe the pun of the name, or I don't know, just anything about it.
I liked it.
All right. How about you, Sira?
I'm indifferent to it.
All right. Well, you guys just feel free to jump in at any point. Tell me why you liked it or disliked it as we were as we go through this here. But as this is a quest week, of course, I will remind everyone that spoilers are going to be discussed here. So if that bothers you, then fast forward a bit until it's time to move on to something else. So you start this quest by talking to Chuck in the Ardoyan Zoo, and basically he tells you that there's the penguins are up to something once again, and this time, of course, in the desert, and you need to go talk to Relica, or go talk to operatives in Relica to figure out what is exactly going on. He gives you a code word, and then you make your way to the Relica marketplace. So I guess I'll ask you guys as a bit of a question here as we were first going in. If you guys didn't look up anything about this quest prior to starting it, what did you guys think we were going to be dealing with when you went to go talk to the operatives?
Oh, I had no idea. I mean, I had seen the picture, like the ad picture that they used of the penguins in the desert. So I kind of figured it would end up there. But I wasn't really sure what we were getting ourselves into.
All right. How about you, Siri?
I was overly enthusiastic and was already in the base of in the penguin base until I figured out that I actually had to go to Relica. So that was me.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I had no idea where we were going, but the desert was pretty obvious as like a location. So I mean, I assumed that they would start an outpost there or something, but otherwise there was not really an obvious hint as to what was going to happen.
And you did get a little code word that you had to use when you were discussing with the two operatives. Everyone's code word was different, and you had a destination, a weather option, and a fish option. So, you know, they say you should try to remember this, but if you forget this, it is, of course, in the quest journal, so you can just pop that open and see what it was there. So basically, after you talk to the operatives, you'll see what has been happening in the desert, and they have created the quote, a flying box, which we'll get to in just a bit, and I think this is a irksome point for many people, but this flying box appears in the desert and attempts to, quote, terraform that area to make it more habitable to penguins.
So how did we as a player know that that thing landed all the way on the other side of Gildenor in the desert? Like,
that's right, because we just got
entirely sure.
We just got a cutscene when we were talking to the operatives about this happening. It wasn't like there's any television or anything like that happening in our heads.
Yeah, the NPCs just kind of said, oh, it looks like it went all the way to Polnovnich. You should go check that out.
Yeah. And of course, that's where you go next, and you basically examine that there. Oh, there's a different crocodile here. And you talk to Dundee there, and he basically says he's studying the crocodiles, and he's able to actually talk to them. And we get, lo and behold, a croc speak amulet, which lets us talk to crocodiles. You know, this is like much like the camel speak amulet and the cat speak amulet. You know, we're just talking to all the various animals that normally can't speak when they're in quests like this. So I kind of got a chuckle about that. How about you guys?
I thought it was so... They just like, oh, hey, you can talk to a crocodile with this amulet. And like, I felt they were taking a bit of a stab at themselves for adding all these animal talk amulets. So I think it's funny.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm not too surprised. They've got every other animal. Might as well throw in the crocodiles.
And, you know, it's also said that Croc, the crocodile you have to talk with, initially escaped from the Ardoyan Zoo and is worried about what is happening to his desert because, of course, the crocodiles need the heat to survive and thrive there. So kind of a reverse global warming kind of thing, except it's going to be cooled down because the penguins are terraforming it for them. So,
well, didn't they do that in a past quest too with the dwarven factory thing?
I don't recall.
What was that?
Sirion, do you recall anything on this trajectory?
I do not remember, I'm afraid.
No. Yeah, I'll try and find the name and see if I can remember it later.
All right, you're on your own then, Sarah. But after that, you basically investigate the box thing, and it is called the TARDIS. So,
I mean, you have to mention the conversation you have. Do you have the time? I think you have the time to have a conversation with the crocodile, don't you?
Right.
You do.
And, you know, this is, I think, where this quest kind of shifts from being potentially serious to being one of the least serious quests Jagex has done in a long time, and I think there's good things and bad things about that, but what about the time travel conversation, Sirion?
So, when you talk to the crocodile, you talk about possible solutions, and one of them would be to travel back in time and make sure that the box never arrives in the desert, and at that point, the character holds an entire speech that might as well have been written by Mott Raven about how time travel is a really, really bad lore mechanism and should not be used and could lead to a paradox and all kinds of weird stuff. And basically, we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, that might have been a foreshadowing of what is to come.
What is to come in huge proportions? Because, you know, when we start this quest, we're in the sixth age, right? Are we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the time travel component. Well, this is going to get confusing, so we'll just save this for a bit. you know, I'm normally okay to manage these kind of time travel things, but this was kind of confusing when you think about it because there's no outright label on your screen of what time period you're in. But anyways, you investigate the TARDIS, which stands for Terraforming Arctic Refrigeration Dispersing Ice Spreader, which I've never watched Doctor Who. So you guys tell me what this device
does. Time and relative dimension in space.
Okay, so it's basically their time travel device then, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So time travel as a quest mechanic. Yes, no, maybe so, even though Mod Raven has sworn off it with the Enchanted Key before.
Yep.
What do you guys think? Should we even be entertaining this idea?
Of time travel in general?
Yeah, in RuneScape.
I'm not opposed to it. I think the Enchanted Key allowed for a sort of reasonable method of it, where you sort of just visiting glimpses of the past and you can't really do much, but something like this is a little more extreme.
All right, how about you, Sirion?
Time travel is, you can do really interesting things with it. I think you can do funny things with it. I think you can do quite serious things with it. Like, it can definitely be a really strong plot device, and that is part of the linearity of stories. Like, you can take the linearity out of it, which makes it more interesting. But you have to be really careful, not only because you can confuse the viewer if you don't do it right, but also time travel is just weird and can be paradoxical. And like, if you want to do something with it, you have to use it in a way like that is not clearly entirely wrong.
Right, and if it's done,
be very intelligent about it.
Exactly, yes. And if it's done improperly, it's sloppy. But I think the use we had
here.
Wow!
But I think the use we had here was relatively simple. But we'll get to that in just a bit. So, of course, after you have that discussion, you decide that you should go tell Chuck what's exactly happening in the desert, because as of this point, Chuck doesn't know what's going on. So you inform Chuck, then he says, oh, go back there and talk to some penguins and figure out what's going on. And this is the part of the quest where you need your penguin suit. So just have that in your inventory, and then you're able to automatically get in your penguin suit when it's time up there in the desert. And you talk to the four main name penguins there. Oh, you didn't have it?
It should be noted that I didn't have it, but Chuck will give you one if you don't have one.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
But he says he'll only give you one.
Right. Yeah, for some reason I have two of them in my bank. I'm not sure how I got the second one.
So I was the enthusiastic person that went to the penguin base, and actually as soon as I went there and did the tuxedo time thing on the ice bed that's there, I got a free penguin suit. So I already had it in my inventory.
Okay. Well, that's good. It works like that, and it's not too linear, and that's what we've come to expect with RuneScape Quest. So you talk to the four named penguins there: Emperor, Wing, Gordon, Hugh, and Elon. And then each of them provide some more information, and you ask each of them ultimately if they're a spy. And then finally, through that conversation, you find that Gordon is the spy, and he will give you the GPS. Which, I mean, ordinarily in real life, the GPS is the global positioning system, but in RuneScape, the GPS is the general penguin spying device, and that it helps you find the secret bunker up on the iceberg where you ultimately went first in the quest, Sirion.
I skipped ahead a bit.
Yeah. So,
jump the gun.
After you make your way up to the iceberg, you basically follow this around in much the same way that you would follow a scan clue scroll, I guess, or I guess maybe a coordinate system clue scroll. I think it took 3 or 4 incorrect digs at the various locations, finding various items before finding the hatch to go down into. And I assume that was the same for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then when you find that, you need your chip and fin, which of course is in reference to the real-life chip and pin codes that we use probably on our banking cards and credit cards. So unsurprisingly, the simple passcode here was 1234, which, I mean,
never would have guessed it.
Yeah, never would have guessed it. They could also went with 000 or 111, but and once again, if you for some reason forget that the code is 1234, you can find it in your quest journal. So then you're into the penguin base. And this is where the quest, I think, for me personally, really turned into a classic RuneScape quest. Because inside the penguin base, you know, at the very beginning, there's really nothing in there. There's no penguins in there. So you're basically running around finding various things because you're trying to put together your time travel device, which, You guys ready for this? It's called the DeLorean device. Emphasis, of course, on Back to the Future's DeLorean.
But also DeLorean, as in, like,
break the lore.
The lore out of
right.
this.
Right.
I thought it was really clever.
Okay.
It's like a double pun.
Yeah. So basically what happens is you search through all the rooms, find all the things, and then combine them all together and add them to the DeLorean device, and then you're able to use the DeLorean device to teleport places. But at first, of course, it's not teleporting you through time like it's supposed to. It teleports you to a number of incorrect places. I think the first one was a monkey island with coconuts and a monkey mm-hmm. wrench. I picked up the coconuts, though I don't know where they went after the quest. Did you guys pick up the coconuts?
So all the items that you didn't need to get to the next phase you had in your inventory would be removed from your inventory after every teleport.
Okay, I was wondering where they went. Oh, that's too bad. But anyways, first stage, you use the monkey wrench on the DeLorean device, tune it a bit again, teleport somewhere else, and you're into another area where you see the penguin bongos and cowbells from a different quest, and then of course you can use those on the DeLorean device, and then you teleport to a cabbage field with Andrew, Paul, and Ian Gower there. Of course you can't interact with them, but they are there as the cabbage mancers from the Gower quest last year. You know, and this was a huge field of cabbage, and of course, with that being the only thing there, you ultimately have to use the cabbage on the DeLorean device to get it to go to its final correct destination. Or was that the final correct destination?
No,
or?
You missed the mines, I think.
Ah, okay. You know, and you know, this is what screams Bottle Quest here, is because this quest is quite clearly a Bottle Quest, with the exception of the little, you know, TARDIS device and the new penguin room, because it uses the models from the Gower quest. It uses all the same item models when you're inside the penguin base. So, and you know, in that regard, just having all these items in the inventory and putting them together and moving through various stages like this is, for me, what made it feel like a classic RS quest, and that's why I called it that.
So what did you think of the reference in the Mining Guild to all the bots that look the same?
Yeah, you know, I thought
they must get tired of looking at each other.
Right. The final one is the Mining Guild and a bunch of bots there. You know, it kind of said they were all like a hive mind kind of thing. So, you know, that could have maybe been a Borg reference, but it was probably more likely a reference to the past issues that the mining skill has had with botting in RuneScape.
I would have been more entertained if they had used the classic bot model.
Yeah, I agreed. I should have done that.
Oh, you, like the one with the green hairs,
the green
and
shirt,
everything?
The Bob outfit.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, I think at this stage there's one. The final one you talked to wasn't really a bot because he had a dragon pickaxe, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So after you do that, you'll get a pair of old boots and you use the boots on the DeLorean device to reboot it, which we all do with our computers every so often.
Reboot. Oh, yeah.
I don't get it.
Reboot. It contains the word boot.
I don't get it.
I think Sierra's pulling your leg right now.
I don't get it.
But anyways, and then finally you end up exactly where you want it to be, in the past, at the secret penguin bunker, with penguins in there. And then, you know, once again, you talk to pretty much all the penguins, especially the named ones. And then in the central room, you'll be given a list of things to get, including 120, I believe it was, kilowatt energy.
121.
Yes.
121 kilowatt energy.
No, I don't think it was. I think it was an even number.
No, it was 121. Also, a fish vention rod, which is basically a fishing rod with a cog on it.
Fish vention rod.
Yeah, and see, this was a quest that, you know, probably almost broke the fourth wall as much as the Gower quest did, I think, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
So, also, let's see, what were the other items?
You need a 19. You need a 1985 lemon. What was that? Lemon soul runes or just lemon runes?
Lemon soul runes.
Lemon fish runes.
Right, lemon soul runes, because obviously soul is a fish. S-O-L-E. Play on the soul runes that we still haven't got in-game. Let's see, what else is there?
The 1985 is actually a direct reference to the year in Back to the Future.
Oh, okay. Right.
There was the coolant, and you need a...
You basically get an ant pouch, a giant ant pouch, and then put some ice on it, and whoa, cool ant. It's a coolant. But you basically throw all these together, and then after that, there's a puzzle that involves using your divination energy. 50 of, let's see, what kind of energies were they again? Bright, flickering, gleaming, and sparkling, I believe it was. Each of these energies, you dump them into the energy pack, and it's basically implied, I think, here that you're going to be using divine energy to send the TARDIS to the desert where it is, right?
Yeah, so you might judge me right now, but I am one of those people that looks at that clicks the button, show the required item for this quest, because I hate having to interrupt my quest to get items I don't have.
Yeah, so I'm in the same boat.
I hit that button. I was like, okay, I need insulated boots. I need a cooling thing from like the Slayer Master. So I had like the whole thing, everything in my inventory. The penguin suit was missing, but you can get that through the quest, so that's fine. The notable absence of the divination energies really annoyed me.
Yeah.
Because I had to like go out, get the energies, and come back in. And
That was annoying.
And plus, if you're doing this on release day, you're going to ultimately, you're probably not going to want to purchase it, and you're going to need to buy from the Grand Exchange, right?
I had most of the energies in my inventory except for one, which I just paid like 3 times the main price for because it was not that much. I was lazy in that respect. But yeah. And this is the point. Like, I was enjoying the quest quite a lot up to this point, and this is where it really started to fall apart for me, because this is where you started understanding where the paradox of the time travel comes from.
Right.
Because when you go back in time, you go back to the fifth age, and you have the conversations with the penguins makes that very, very clear. And then they require something that is pointing towards divine energy, but when you explain divine energy, they don't know what it is, but you take it out of the future into the past to go back into the future, which I think was really cleverly done, like needing something from the sixth age in the fifth age to go back to what happens in the sixth age.
Hence that the term back to the freezer, back to the future.
Yeah, so this is really what makes it this is the intelligence that is the time travel in this case, but this whole divination requirement, where did it even come from? It fell out of nowhere. There was no build up to the requirement for divination. It could have been done so much better without being like, oh, all of a sudden you need 50 divination to do these energies, and I feel that could have been done.
Right.
A lot better. Like, maybe it could have just required your knowledge of that divination existed. Or, I mean, there was just no build-up.
Or you could have found some kind of fifth age alternative, maybe.
Yeah. Yes, I think they should have done something that takes it from the sixth age. I think that is the nice part of this time travel thing, because that makes this paradoxical loop. But in the end, there's just, it fell flat on its face. Like, the divination energy was there, and that's it. And that failed, sort of.
Right. And, you know, I think that, I don't think they could have named the quest Back to the Freezer if they didn't have the divination energy requiring you from the sixth age in the fifth age, requiring you to go to the sixth age. And you're right, that is entirely paradoxical. And I mean,
it's fun. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah, but... and it also says that you your character who is doing this quest is the whole reason that this thing initially appeared in the desert to begin with, because otherwise how would the penguins have got there?
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
is this a sticking point for people on this quest? Because, you know, this just seems like ordinary time travel to me.
Yeah.
Sierra?
I don't know. It's a mess.
Okay, so does that mean you weren't a fan of it, or?
I mean, it's, like I said earlier, I'm not inherently opposed to time travel, but it just seemed, like you said, paradoxical and just kind of pointless.
Right, and that's normally what time travel is, and anyone who watches sci-fi knows that, but I'm just trying to wrap my head around the whole thing that, okay, so if we're going to put time travel in this quest and have this on about divination, so does this officially bring the Penguin Quest into the Sixth Age then? I guess that's their way of doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, perhaps they needed to do that because they just want to tie off the Fifth Age storylines or bring them into the Sixth Age. So,
I don't think that they needed to do this to bring it into the Sixth Age, though. I mean, it's just like a year passed. They could have just continued where they left off and nobody would have questioned it because, oh, it's the next year. Okay, here we go.
Oh, I don't think this was necessarily done to bring it into the Sixth Age. I think this was just an interesting idea around this transition of, like, building this paradox, because that is sort of the core of this quest. And I mean, it's hard to miss if you don't really think about it.
Right.
I think. But, right. Like, I think that was the core concept they wanted to do. They wanted to make a joke out of it. I think they succeeded for me because I got it and I enjoyed it. I think it could have done better. I think it had its mistakes, but I think the core of the quest was really strong. And did they have to do it? No, they could have done it differently. Am I happy they did it this way? I think so.
Yeah, and I mean, what did you guys see on the forums as to what the community was upset about with this quest?
Oh, I haven't looked at the official forums at
so all. I had a discussion about this before with Sarah on like our clan Discord, and I've heard other people have similar responses, which is that the quest feels pointless as it doesn't really move the main lore points in the Penguin Quest forward and doesn't really seem to have a big effect in the end, because everything you do in the quest sort of precedes the start point of the quest. So you start the quest and then you go back and then the quest ends almost exactly where the quest starts. It's basically a loop.
Right.
So it feels inconsequential. That's, I think, the main criticism, but like, correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
It kind of is. It basically just ended on the plot twist. It was all a dream.
Well, ooh. But it wasn't, because it was time travel. And
well, no, but I'm saying it's that concept of, oh, it's a dream. None of it really happened. None of it really matters.
You know what I think would an interesting thing to do would be to take a poll of the people who feel that it was, you know, just a loop like that, Siri, yourself included, and, you know, see in general what their stances are on time travel in RuneScape and time travel in sci-fi thing. Watch sci-fi with that. I think that'd be an interesting thing to correlate.
I guess I agree with the point that maybe this quest did not make huge advancements in the storyline. That is true. I mean, it felt sort of like a side quest in the series. But I don't think it has to be a bad thing. We have all these huge quests that always do some epic story plotting, and like we just come out of a year where we did the entire Sliska storyline in 1 year, where every quest had huge reveals, big character developments, and that kind of stuff. And then we get this bottle quest, because that's what it is, which is just there to have fun for, like, how long was it? Like 90 minutes?
Yeah, around
hours?
There.
Something like that.
And I enjoyed the content, and I thought it was witty, I thought it fit with RuneScape, I thought it added a bit of character to the Penguin Quest, and it gave some love to that storyline. What more do we want? Why do we always need this big feel?
Yeah,
I don't think it always needs to be a big feel, but I do feel like there should at least be some relevant story to it, because I don't think that this added anything to the Penguin Quests. I think this added about as much to the Penguin Quests as the, what was it, the Christmas event from 2 years ago did when they did the penguins.
So we have other storylines that don't really add anything to the game. One small favor. What storyline does it have?
It's not about even going into the game. It's just the storyline of itself that I care about personally.
If this was let's say we move this quest out of the penguin storyline and it was something entirely on its own, like replace all the penguins with I don't know, any other animals.
Imps.
Would it then have been better?
It would have definitely had a different context behind it, but my still main, even if the ending was different, I would probably be happier with it. I'm just mostly upset that the story itself didn't matter because of the ending. I care more about story than just the little jokes and whatnot. I'm a story guy. So just
The story will matter because going forward, the penguins are now officially, aside from yourself with a few glimpses, one of the only factions in RuneScape that has experienced with time travel before. And that could have huge implications for other quest lines should the penguins be called upon in any kind of future Elder God quest, for example. And who knows what's in store for the final penguin quest.
The penguins themselves aren't involved with time travel. None of them actually experienced it. We time traveled back to them, and the one that invented the time travel machine is a secret agent.
I mean, you say the story didn't matter, but I think what you sort of have to accept is that the story is sort of offset. If you consider maybe the prime timeline, let's call it timeline prime. That is, you start the quest, and then everything that happens in that timeline is the first 10 minutes of the quest. Then you go back in time and actually play out events that are in the past. Then in the end, you come back, and only those 10 minutes of the first quest have passed. Yes, that might not seem like a lot, but, the whole part running up to that is before that, and if you consider the actual starting point in the timeline to the end, a lot more happened. And if you hadn't gone back in time, this whole thing wouldn't have happened. And so actually, your actions did matter. It's just a bit more obfuscated in this way.
And, I think another thing that we need to remember is that RuneScape is a game that started off and really got its footing in specifically the lore and the storylines in the very beginning by not taking itself too seriously. Biggest example of that is having a questing game called Romeo and Juliet with a RuneScape spin on it that was deemed, so out of game lore and so out of the game world that it was ultimately removed. And that is how JAX designed themselves in the past. Now, fast forward to 2017 and 2016 when this quest was produced, I think that this Penguin quest is ultimately what we can see from JAGEX when JAGEX doesn't take itself seriously, which is what lots of people love for JAGEX to do, because that is what the old RuneScape felt like. So with that regard, I think that this quest, it doesn't need to fit in with the rest of the Penguin storyline, because I think the biggest thing that we realize here is that the Penguins now have the ability to time travel. And I think that is what needs to be taken away from this quest.
Do they, though?
Well, I mean, there's a time travel machine with energy there that could be used.
The TARDIS doesn't time travel. The TARDIS never time traveled. It was the DeLorean device.
Mm-hmm.
It's created, operated by, and only known by us and Gordon, and Gordon's not actually a penguin. Or he is a penguin, but he's not with the penguins.
Correct. The TARDIS never travels in time. We travel back in time and then travel along the timeline together with the TARDIS back to the point where the quest started.
So the penguins themselves don't actually have time travel. We only know about that time travel stuff. The penguins themselves do not.
You and Gordon do.
Yes, and Gordon is on our side, not the penguins.
Right, and I mean, that could ultimately be a jumping off point for a future quest.
And if it is, maybe I'll cut this one some slack. But I think this is, like you said, a bottle quest, and it's not going to matter when they do, hopefully, inevitably, continue the main Penguin storyline.
Yeah, and I mean, we see it all the time in TV shows and whatnot. You have a TV show doing an arc for a season of something or other, and, you know, there is an off episode that, you know, briefly touches on that storyline and filler. Has some other stuff in, filler. And I think that it's okay to do that for this Penguin quest.
I mean, one of the reasons, that, like, this is just speculation, but one of the reasons, I mean, Jagex is a British company, and I mean, I live in the UK, so I'm used to their humor. I've always sort of been aligned with that type of humor. But, like, maybe this is a cultural thing as well, right?
It might be.
Like, maybe people, like, I don't want to, like, say that this isn't necessarily the case, but I can imagine that, like, Americans have a very different kind of humor than British people. Well, and yeah. Maybe this just doesn't quite synergize with people. Like, maybe it just doesn't hit home for the people that do not necessarily have the same cultural background. That might very well be possible, and that is maybe something that Jazz can take in as feedback into future quests.
I'll readily admit that I don't synergize as much with British humor, so that might be part of why I'm not as fond of it.
Okay.
I mean, we know, for example, that this is very heavily inspired by Doctor Who,
right,
and Back to the Future, which, I mean, you have to know these things to actually align with all the references in the quest.
Yeah, and I mean, if not, then you're just going to see a Penguin quest that perhaps doesn't fit in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. We got the elephant out of the room now. What did you guys think of the quote puzzle at the end? You know, I got this, you know, within 4 or 5 rows. How long did it take you guys? And I was just, you know, going along and, oh, let's see what we can do.
Yeah, it only took me like 5 or 6 rows. It wasn't that hard once I knew what those little dots on the side meant.
It took me all 10 rows. I had to be really careful in my last attempt to use all the information and really get the right combination.
Okay.
It was just trial and error once you know what those little boxes meant.
And I mean, it's
based
a game
after the game Mastermind.
Yes, and I played a lot.
I've never actually played it, so
I played it a lot when I was a kid.
I had never even heard of it before this quest, to be honest.
Yeah, same. And for anyone doing the quest, you know, there's an eye in the top of the battery control station window that you can mouse over, and it'll tell you what the white and gray squares are for, to kind of give you an idea of what's going on. Then you can kind of just play trial and error a bit with how things are set up. And do not hit the reset button, because that'll completely reset not only what you've done so far, but it'll give you an entirely new solution to strive for in the end. So, first time I did it, I got 3 of them right off the bat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes it easy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, I had gotten, I think, maybe 1 or 2 right, but then I confused myself and was going for the white boxes as the correct answer.
Right.
And so I was like, wait, I have all white. What's going on? Oh, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a huge puzzle, and it's not something that's going to make people tear their hair out. So.
No.
But beyond that, return to the present and pretty much quest complete after you talk to the penguins again. So I think if we can get the time travel stuff out of the way and question of whether or not it fits and look at this as purely a RuneScape bottle quest, I think it was a pretty good quest.
I would agree. I think this is really what we want to see from bottle quest.
Like, right.
The only bottle quest we had so far was the Gobi one, if I remember correctly.
Yep,
and
that's right.
That didn't feel like a bottle quest because it still had a lot of new assets. And this, you saw that they reused a lot of assets and just made slight, like, even then the base was filled with little references and tiny changes to, like, the icons and textures, which made it really enjoyable to explore. I think it could not have been done much better with an entire new set of graphics, and I doubt this was really that expensive to develop. So I am impressed, and yeah. I really hope and we can see much more of this.
And that's why back in the day they were able to crank these quests out so quick, is because, you know, assuming they were, because that's exactly what we wanted to get back to, is, you know, existing assets being used, simpler storylines, you know, classic RuneScape quests. And when you string all those together and you look at them as if, you know, they were cranking out the quests, you know, one or two every month like they used to, then you end up to a stage where, oh, this feels like old RuneScape quests. And I think that in accomplishing that, they do something, of course, for us veterans, but they also give the newer players, people who started, you know, north of 2010, something to experience that they didn't necessarily get to experience before, which I think is great. So overall, you know, its execution was well done, and I think that the sticking point just comes from the fact that time travel and, you know, maybe these aspects don't fit in RuneScape, but... question I'd ask you guys, and anyone who is doubting that, has the Penguin Quest ever been about being serious?
No, but I still enjoy even a non-serious story to be taken a little bit seriously. And it's been 5 years since we've had a quest in that line, so I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get a real continuation.
All right. Well then, for the rewards, it was one quest point, an antique lamp worth 500 XP that you find during the quest when you're digging around, 25,000 XP in divination and runecrafting, 15,000 in slayer and agility, and 10,000 XP in invention, providing you have completed the invention tutorial. In addition, additional penguin to find when you're doing penguin hide and seek, and an increase in experience for Penguin Hide and Seek and Balthazar's Bonanza. So, yeah.
So the invention reward, like, sort of brings me to one point that I always also, like, found sort of troublesome, maybe. And that is that this quest, like, if you look at the levels and, like, where the quest, or, like, the Penguin quest line is at this point, is that it's definitely aimed at mid-level players.
Right.
And these will most likely not have been in contact with invention yet. And just as you had need the cultural background to get the references to, like, Doctor Who and Back to the Future, there is also the reference to Fish Vengeance, which every person that has done proper invention training will get. But if you're a mid-level player, that's totally lost on you. So there were a few things in the quest where Jagger's just missed the mark, which is the way divination was brought in, the way that invention was sort of brought in as well. These things just didn't quite work out as well as it could have done. So there's definitely mistakes in this quest, like definitely things that could have been done better.
Yeah, and what else? I mean, you get the invention XP after you talk to your Chuck when you've done the invention tutorial, so there's that. But I think this whole quest did break the fourth wall with various things. Not as much as the Gower quest did, but enough to be apparent, and perhaps that's, I think, what everyone is a little bit concerned about, is that a what was initially a serious or somewhat serious quest line kind of went in the direction of the Gower quest. So,
I'd also like to point out that this was a master ranked quest. I didn't really get that personally.
Well, and see, that's the thing. The way I look at this is, you know, back in the day, master quests were, you know, the hardest thing we would get before Grandmaster, and we've all graduated to Grandmaster level difficulty with various quests in that regard, that Master Quest, you know, just feel kind of simpler in regards to that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you look at it, Desert Treasure was Master, Monkey Madness, I think, was Master, this is Master.
Nomad's Elegy was Master, and that's a new one.
Well, not as new.
It's newer.
Nomad's Elegy, right. Okay, last year's.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was leading up to a Grandmaster, so I can see that. But
Lord of Vampirium. It just seems like they should revisit their ranking a little bit with quests.
Well, I mean, in regards to the XP, or just...
Just the ranking. It just doesn't seem like It's a bit misleading.
All right. Yeah. Anything else?
I just saw that and I was confused.
On the quest before we move on to other things.
So, final question for both of you. What is your thought on... I mean, they made some... The quest makes some pretty big changes to the rewards, both for the circus and for Penguin Hide and Seek. What is your thoughts on sort of locking those behind a quest like this, which is not serious at all and sort of seems to be there to enjoy, to play to, not for the rewards?
I wasn't bothered too much by that. I am still kind of confused by the scales to your level thing because it kind of already did. They could have been a little bit more clear on that, but I'm not too bothered by it.
Yeah, I'm not too bothered either because, you know, I'm very much of the opinion that if you're going to put a decent reward behind a quest, you want people to play the quest for the reason to play the quest, not necessarily just, oh, let's go get the reward at the end of this quest and click, click, click and move through it like there's no tomorrow, right? So I think anytime that a quest wants to be played by people and it has a good reward behind it, that's good. And I mean, who doesn't want to play a Penguin quest, right?
I just want to play the next one in the series.
There you go. What would you guys rate this out of 5? Sarah?
Out of 5? I'm probably closer to like a 2 out of 5.
Wow, okay.
2.5.
Sirion?
If I can go.
I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 4 out of 5 as well on this. And, you know, I think there's a few niggles along the way. And it all comes down to, I guess, the player perception of what should be serious and what should be in RuneScape as Bottle Quest, I guess. So, but, I mean, if you just take it for what it is as a Penguin quest, I think it's a great quest, right?
That's what I would say, yeah.
It's like going to see the 2009 Star Trek reboot movie. If you take it for just a good science fiction action movie, it's great. But if you are a mega Star Trek fan and you split all the hairs everywhere, the 2009 movie was really annoying.
I love how you take a movie that involves time travel as an analogy. It's perfect.
Well, there you go. I mean, actually, that's almost exactly the same thing, except a new timeline.
So basically, this is Penguins in the Kelvin timeline.
Well, Shane's dying.
I did not realize this when I was doing the quest. Did you realize that when you were doing the quest, Sirion?
No, not at all. Just make me aware of that.
You're entirely right. You're entirely right. And much like the, you know, anyone who listens to this podcast should know I'm a huge Star Trek fan. And the first watch through and the second watch through of the 2009 Star Trek movie, it just didn't feel authentic and it didn't feel as though it was being taken itself seriously. But if you just recalibrate your mind a bit and put yourself in that exact storyline, much like you can do in the Penguin Quest, it's a good movie and a good Star Trek movie at that. Much like this is a good quest and a good Penguin Quest.
There you go.
Okay, I lost it there, but...
Can I have an aside real quick?
Yeah, please
the
do.
The quest I was trying to refer to earlier was Perils of Ice Mountain.
Okay.
With the global warming, that whole thing.
All right. Yeah, I remember that now. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah.
All right, shall we move on to the patch notes for this week?
They were a bit bare bones this week, weren't they?
Yeah, there were only a couple that I think really deserve mentioning. The Elven Mushroom patch now works correctly with the Farming Cape perk. That's good. Another reason for everyone to do the Elf Achievement Diaries. And a variety of lucky items from Treasure Hunter can now be stored with Diango. Please note that dying and not protecting the items will still permanently lose the item.
Yes.
So that's good.
Those things have been sitting in my bank for way too long.
Yep, I agree. I mean,
I always cash out lucky items.
I should have cashed them out, but I didn't for some reason because I got an Armadyl Godsword.
Oh, that's nice.
I was like, oh, I'll keep it, but I'm never, ever, ever going to use it.
It's got a nifty special on it, and it's a level 75 weapon, which, I mean, it's not good for doing high-end stuff, but it's there.
Yeah.
Can we augment lucky items?
I don't think you can.
Ah, oh, damn.
I don't think you can even disassemble them.
Too bad. Anything else in the patch notes? I know it was very thin this week.
There was hot fixes, and there wasn't even any ninja stuff.
Okay, fair enough.
So,
well,
they fixed a typo. That seems like the most exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Alrighty. So this week, Mod Shawnee has a topic going on the official forums about skill cape reworks. As it stands right now, the smithing and agility skill capes will be able to get reworked. They don't have any details on what they're going to do yet because they wanted to have a discussion about it. So basically, this thread here is to dump ideas for your skill capes. So this goes with our huge discussion last week on the skill cape perks. And there's actually an interesting reply here. Someone who uses Legacy Combat says, I don't use EOC. Strength cape is useless for me. So, I mean, that's something to consider, right?
I'm an EOC guy. I don't care. I'm an EOC guy.
Yeah. Sirion, are you going to be doing a posting on this thread?
I don't think so. Like, I find it hard to really become part of the discussion. You need to invest time.
Right.
And frankly, I don't have that.
Right. I
think just posting your ID and then just not coming back to it, it's not going to do much. So you really have to start investing it and go into this discussion.
Because, you know, one of the biggest things I find on the RS official forums is there are people who think they're too great for the forums that they're inhabiting. And, you know, you post an idea and they'll, you know, pretend they're a JMod and, you know, shoot it down and tear it all apart and think they have better ideas. And, I mean, this is exactly what you're going with, is should I post these ideas here and ultimately have to come back and deal with this? So I can see where you're going with that. But, you know, there's 12 pages here. I had expected a little bit more for this. There's definitely some people who have posted huge ideas about all the capes that are in question.
Most of the shit posters will have moved to the shithole by now, so.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess it has become a bit better. I have the feeling that discussions on the forums are often quite constructive.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because if you go too far, like there's heavy moderation on the RuneScape forums. So I'm actually was quite pleased to see this discussion happening on the forums and not on Reddit
or Twitter. Because
JMods have the tendency of using those platforms probably because they're more popular, but you don't get as much constructive feedback out of them.
I think. And, you know, if you post it on Reddit and people don't disagree with your idea, it's deleted or voted into oblivion or removed by a Reddit mod. So, okay, thank you for posting this here. I don't think there's too much that we need to go through here, but I guess if you guys have ideas, you can post them on this thread if you feel that you need the finger exercise to keep up with all the replies here. So kudos to Mod Shawnee for posting that. Also, a huge NXT update for the client this week. A number of changes that came out on the 1st of March. I think the biggest one is that, for me, is they fixed the issue that caused extended load times on the Mac. You know, take upwards of 30 seconds to a minute sometimes to pop the client open before it would even start loading the game. So that's nice. Memory usage also reduced by about 30%.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, I did not run into memory issues, but it's definitely always good to save that.
Yeah.
For me, the most notable thing was that there was a lot of fixes for crashes, and I was running into crashes on when I play on my Mac on OS 10. I get crashes every day.
I remember that back then.
That was like until very recently. I haven't played RuneScape on my Mac since recently, so I don't know if it's fixed, but that was definitely really annoying. Like, I had to expect at least one or two crashes every day.
Mm-hmm.
And they came at really annoying moments, like in the middle of combat. So really happy that they keep committing to making these changes, even on platforms like OS X.
Did you ever get the problem where at certain very specific spots it would just start like flashing black, just like really rapidly?
I think I've had it, but not like that was a long while ago.
It hasn't been recently, but there used to be where like specific spots every single time consistently, the screen would just flash black for a few seconds, just on and off.
And never made the connection to specific spots, but I remember
the phenomenon. I did. There was one in the Armadil God Wars dungeon. I couldn't even... No, it was Sarah Doman in Zilyana's fortress. I could not fight her because there was a spot in there where I just kept crossing and it just screwed me over.
Wow. I am so lucky that I don't have these kind of issues on the Mac with these crashes. Perhaps it's due to the fact I have an AMD graphics card here, but...
I don't know.
It's good they've been fixing it. Let's see. Teleport animations also have been fixed from going out of sync. Custom cursors tweaked on the Mac. I don't use the RS custom cursors, so I never noticed that. So that's good. What did this bump the version number up to? Because my client still said the same old version number when I was looking at this.
Have you updated recently? Because they included an auto-update mechanism. Yeah, you must have.
I'm on it says 2.2.3, I believe.
I have not been able to check, sorry.
Okay. Well then, that's all right. So some good changes.
Maybe the NXT download page might actually say it, right?
Oh, that's a good idea. Let's see.
Let me...
NXT download version 2.2.3. That's the version they're listing up here.
Okay, that should be the newest then.
Yeah, auto update feature for the launcher. Allow Mac OS to run multiple instances of the client back in December. I remember that. All right, so also this week, a dev diary on the reworked achievement system, which is going to be coming at some point later this year. So what are you guys' thoughts on a reworked achievement system? I know we really haven't had a chance to discuss too much about this. But
I haven't watched the video. I don't really watch a lot of their videos, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I think it could be interesting. What were they really talking about in that dev diary?
Well, it was just basically an overview of what this rework is going to do. And it's going to, in essence, combine all of the concurrent achievement areas into one parent type interface. So for example, your quest achievements, your achievement diary task set achievements, your road to comp, trimmed comp, quest point.
Will that be including daily challenges in this?
I don't know if there is anything about that. But it's also going to have categories. So you'll be able to sort by category for things like comp, skills, D&Ds, and et cetera. So I guess what you could do is you could say, look at all the farming, potential farming achievements and go with that for determining how things
are. Not opposed to that. How will this affect the Taskmaster achievement requirements?
That's a good question, and that has not been answered yet. And that maybe that's something we could... throw out there on one of these topics, because Taskmaster is to complete all the tasks, right?
Yes.
In the task sets. So I don't think they could, reasonably change that without causing too much uproar. So let's hope that that's going to be the case.
Well, I'm kind of holding out that they take Dominion Tower out of the requirements.
Oh, please. Last weekend, I ticked up the final tasks except for the Dominion Tower one.
Oh, it's, don't remind me of
if
that.
If they would remove it, I would not cry.
No, I would probably actually go for Taskmaster if they removed it.
So, I really like the idea, I think, as long as it's well executed. If you compare it to other games, especially MMOs, for example, Guild Wars 2 has this really extensive achievement system that also combines everything in there. And what it does really nicely is it does, like, it has these achievements for killing this many monsters, but also achievements for exploration, for unlocking all the war portals, unlocking all the fast travel locations. Like, exploration is a big part of unlocking the achievements as well. Like, it sort of forces you to do everything instead of only going for this fastest path to, like, level 80, which is the maximum.
Right.
So that does really well. And I even in back when I tried World of Warcraft, like the demo thing, like a free trial, like I remember that exploring parts would also unlock or make progress towards certain achievements, and that feels really satisfying, and also makes it feel like you're making progress at a more steady rate just by doing things instead of always having to grind to make character process. And
right.
I really,
you know, they are actually considering something like that here.
Yeah, I think... really like the concept of progressing your character without having to do these meaningless tasks, and like just by playing the game, your character becomes better, which is missing right now in the game.
Right.
Yeah. Some of the things they're looking at doing for this are suggested achievements. So basically achievements that you can do quickly based on your levels and what you've been doing. And then they'll be tailored based on your current gameplay. And then this also goes with what both of you guys were saying, is that they want to rework the path system to become more useful. So an example for this would be to get the player to a point where they can take on the first God Wars dungeon without too much of a fuss. So basically you would get set on a various path set of achievements that once you complete all these, you're going to have the necessary skill set to do God Wars.
I can see that. I mean, that's more for newer players, so it's not as relevant to me. But I can see that being a better method of doing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we can, I hope they incorporate daily challenges in this, because daily challenges right now are, I mean, they work, but they're also a bit boring. And what Guild Wars 2 does really well is instead of giving you one daily challenge, they give you like five for that day. And you have to complete three of them to get a daily rewards or something.
Yeah.
But do people really want to be playing that long on RS?
I mean, it depends. Like, I mean, they don't have to be as long. They might be slightly shorter. They might also be things you, like, for example, I mean, Guild Wars is, of course, a lot simpler. You kill monsters, you do crafting, you explore, you do raids, whatever. So it's slightly different in that there's not a lot of different skills you have to do, and you can work towards multiple goals at the same time. But like, the challenges don't have to be just skilling based. It could also be like complete one new quest as a daily challenge, for example. It could also be go and kill five bosses. Like, it could be a lot more varied. And
yeah,
you could look at like the five challenges for that day, and they would rotate. And you could be like, okay, today I feel like doing skilling related stuff. And
yeah, that would be a really good thing to do. And
they could also add in more varied actual methods, because like it's all level based. Once you hit a certain level, you're only going to get, say, rune ceremonial swords for some of them. You're only going to get that, and it's never going to vary up.
And what makes it nice is it. So for example, it tells you in Guild Wars 2 like do that many events in this area, and it sort of helps you slowly chip off requirements towards completely completing the game. So it might also tell you like do this mini game. For like a few
play a game of blank. Yeah.
And if I'm correct, these tasks are actually sort of shared with all the players. So players generally get the same task, which sort of concentrates the player base on a specific area for that day, which can help directing players into content that would otherwise not be popular. Like, imagine if everybody got the daily task play Barbarian Assault, then you can actually find a team there.
Yeah, that would actually be really neat.
Assault would be
It would be a good way of bringing that back.
It's like It's like a daily spotlight. Like, they could, in theory, even take out the spotlight system and replace it with this. So that, like,
yeah,
this has a lot of potential as a system, and I would not mind if they are really bold with this and really explore all the possibilities.
Yeah.
As long as they do it right.
And, you know, one of the things that also came up in the video was, should there be new achievements added? And they said that if new achievements are to be added, they will be focused around the higher levels of gameplay. That doesn't guarantee that they will be added. It's just something that would be logical for them to do.
I'm not entirely sure if I like that specific part of the video. I mean, we don't want this whole attitude of we have to add more things at the high level range just to make it harder to get home. Like, we don't need that attitude.
I totally agree. I think your idea that you came up with first was much better than that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And with all these dev diaries, they do have a central question. And that question for this one is that, would you prefer an X of Y achievement system like we have right now for the task sets, where you've done, you know, 350 of 500 achievements? Or would you prefer a gamer score type system like you have on the Xbox, where each achievement gives you a certain number of points?
I kind of like how it is out of, because you can kind of see your progress and how close you're getting.
Yeah.
This is really, really hard. I think.
I was going to say, at the same time, sort of an achievement score would kind of match quest points in a way, where you have your score. What's your achievement score or whatever?
It would, but I mean, at that same time, I don't know if that's a level of competition that needs to be added to the game. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Because you got to think that you're going to have these achievements added, and eventually people are going to max out on this achievement score. And when that happens, you're going to have a bunch of people at the top once again with different scores based on that. Right. And the thing that makes gamer score work on the Xbox is that not everyone has the same games, so you're not going to have the same gamer score regardless of what you do.
It's not just based on one game. It's based on any number of games across years.
Even though this is one game, you have to imagine this is like many different areas in the game, right? If they make achievements for killing bosses, doing quests, doing achievement diaries, doing exploration, these are very different things. And in a way, I feel you should be able to sort of be scored on separate areas. Like, might not be interested in PVM, and I would feel bad if that would keep my score down. I want to be able to go to exploration and see a high score there. And maybe they could do that with, like, titles, for example. If you get a certain score in a certain category, you unlock rewards like titles or outfits or that kind of stuff. So you get this progress that way. But, I mean, if you need an overall score, I think a score would work best, because it fuels the completionist attitude less than doing the out of score, which is gonna cause people to want to complete that.
Okay,
and I think score might do less.
I'm with you then, 100% for gamer score.
Okay,
on this side of it, then
it's more of a progress track than a checklist.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. All right. Well, there's our feelings on the achievements system. And such great ideas you guys both had with this. I'm going to actually link this part out of the podcast and send it off to Jagex at the various channels. So we'll see what we can do about that.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, that's it for the RS segment this week. We're going to move right on to the questions right now. We have a couple of them this week. We have an audio question to begin with from Parnassius.
G'day guys, Panassius here once again, and again, thanks for the great podcast. My question to you this week is regarding the recent Game Jam stream. If you could have anything added to the game you think players would enjoy, what would you request them do? It can be something as basic as finishing off the pirate quest to a large update like finishing invention and making it a true elite skill, that'd be my choice. There are no limitations. Also, what are your thoughts on the recent Penguin Quest in regard to the overall storyline of said penguins? I found it to be my favourite quest in this series, even though I'm not overly fond of them overall, but it seems to be getting a bit of hate on the forums. Do you think this hate is justified, or are players just expecting too much these days after the huge lore-heavy quests we've had over the past few years, and that they've just forgotten to have fun with these little quirky updates? Love to hear your thoughts. Again, thanks for the great podcast, and I'll see you all in-game.
All right, can I go first with the Game Jam stuff?
Okay. Go for it.
I want three things.
You can only choose one.
Well, I'm going to say
hear all three.
I'm going to label three out then. Number one, I want a construction rework with the greenhouse that lost to the aquarium.
Oh, God.
That's number one. I'm not going to say how it should be done, and that's just number one. Number two is I want either the prestige system or the siphoning skilling pets that we talked about last month. 4 XP and maybe extra little perks along the way. And number three, for my eyes and everyone else out there who has a high DPI screen that can't necessarily increase the size of RS, font scaling, please.
Okay, now you have to choose one of them.
Oh, I know which one of those I would choose.
The prestige / skill XP siphoning.
Okay.
I would absolutely go for the construction update. That's been one of my most wanted things forever.
How about
I might
you guys
even steal
now?
That from you.
Okay.
I am going to go for something completely else. And this is going to be huge. This is going to be hard. But I think this is something that RuneScape needs to... I don't want to sound like as if RuneScape is dying, but I think this is something that would keep RuneScape alive in a really good way. And that is a big multiplayer event that is easy to jump into and get out of. And what I mean with this is it's probably going to be a combination of PvP and skilling.
Are you describing a world event?
I am describing a world event, yes, but I would make it a more persistent one, maybe. I think something like a world event works really well, and I think the second world event, which was Armadale between Bandos, was probably the best of the three of them. That was also because of the PvP factor of it. Like, you could jump into it, you could take it as serious as you want, and you could really be part of your team and in a community work together to do things. I mean, I think we all did the escort missions of the I don't know what it was it Divine Energy that we transported around?
I think
those missions were a lot of fun because there was a group of people just there and you didn't even know them. And I would love to see something like that, maybe on an even bigger scale, maybe on an entirely separate map segment where there's two factions, I would say, which would fight each other. And you can both, in terms of skilling and in terms of combat, contribute to your faction. And what would be even better is if you could, for example, as a clan, work together in a team that might be more tightly connected using voice chat to go on raids in the other's team territory or something. And this is something you can tune into, and you can play the normal game, but you can also be part of that process. And if you build it in such a way that is fair for everybody, maybe just give everybody max combat, have a separate item system so that you can play it with a minor disadvantage if you're level 3.
You know, this could be persistent and be a way of reworking PvP, because when Bounty
yes.
Hunter and Deathmatch came out, this is kind of what they wanted to do, but it kind of fell flat.
So I have been making the parallel with Guild Wars 2 before, and I'm going to do it again because Guild Wars 2 does exactly this. There is the normal game where you just progress as a character. There's the PvP player versus player arena, which is your basic capture points playing style. And as soon as you go into the PvP area, which is like instanced, you become max level. You unlock all the skills. You can like set up your new skilling bars. They are stored as part of your character in the PvP only. So if you go back to your game, it's all set back to your game standards. And also the gear, it has just like one tier of gear as far as I know. So you can choose what you want. And so it really comes down to skill and working together with your team. And there's another PvP situation, which is world versus world versus world, where servers battle each other, where you get this collaboration really, really nicely. And there are clans that focus on this world versus world defense, where you go raid in a group and have a commander or something, and you use voice chat to coordinate attacks. And it feels epic, it feels fun, and you can do it without having to invest in your character too much. And something like that, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, and in essence, it almost sounds like you're describing a modern version of Castle Wars, kind of, except on a larger scale, which would be really neat to see.
Yeah, so I would describe it on a larger scale, where like maybe there's like a bigger map, where there's multiple points, multiple castles that can be conquered, where you have to do like skilling to get supplies, to supply your troops, or to build your castle. So like there's so many aspects that you could add where there would be multiple layers and multiple ways you can contribute. And I mean, this could be done on multiple levels. Like think of a combination of like Castle Wars, Clan Citadels, and I don't know, world events. Like mesh all those together in one big thing.
Yeah, that'd be really great. All right.
Yeah, I'm kind of
probably
split.
Take like 5 years to develop. But.
Yeah, really.
No restrictions, right?
I'm kind of like Shane, where I have a few ideas I can't choose between, but I'm kind of in the same boat as both of you. I want to see them kind of focus more on community stuff, some updates to move the game away from the completionist attitude and more towards something like Sirion's, that cooperative, team-based, just gameplay stuff.
Whether, so what would you
how,
pick?
That's kind of what I would to see them develop.
All right. Fair enough.
But then, of course, there's a construction update, so now I'm conflicted because that's something that needs to happen.
Yep. All right. So part two of that question about the hate on the forums that this is getting. I think we talked about most of that in the podcast about what everyone is saying regarding hate about the recent quest and everything. Anything else?
Yes, I am right with you. I think this was an amazing quest, and people should not expect to have huge quests.
It's like me splitting hairs that the original Enterprise was 300 meters long, but the Kelvin Timeline Enterprise is 4 or 5 times that. Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. that's the kind of splitting hairs we're talking about here. So. All right, now we got an essay of a question from Thieves, who was one of the people who was a little bit upset about this quest, so I will read this. Hey guys, question one. I know the quest is supposed to be comedic, but as a person who loathes Doctor Who and loves RuneScape lore, I can't bear the fact that there is a now in-universe TARDIS sat in the desert. Not even a half-assed wooden Jagex-style TARDIS. An actual metal, time-traveling phone box is sat in the desert, spewing ice like a fridge dispenser. My question is, if you were a brand new player who happened to be enjoying the Egyptian/Arabian Nights feel of the desert, how would you feel about seeing a likely copyright sci-fi object sat around in the desert? And I'll read part two.
Yeah.
Question two. If you were consuming any media supposedly set in medieval times, what would you think if something like this happened? Lord of the Rings, Gandalf suddenly pulls out an actual lightsaber and goes down on some orcs. Game of Thrones, Daenerys ditches the dragons and instead rides Tron light bike to Westeros. Sure, it would LOL XD random, but it makes the rich lore of the text ridiculous. We have invention now, I suppose, which of course means sci-fi-esque inventions in our lore instead of steam coal machines that make more sense, /sarcasm. I'm looking forward to buying an AT-AT from Solobons and mowing down some holographic dark beasts in the near future. What's an AT-AT?
That's Star Wars.
Oh, God. I'll reiterate. I know the quest is supposed to be jokey and the whole series is just silly, but this is all still canon. For anyone who cares about the lore of this game, this is just mind-numbingly stupid. Gower Quest does a phenomenal job at... better job at being funny and tongue-in-cheek. So what the heck is this hot garbage? Apologies for the rant and wall of text. Thanks for reading. So, question one. If you were a new player, how would you feel about seeing this in the desert? Well, I think the answer to that is that unless you did the Penguin Quest, you wouldn't see this in the desert.
That's true. You have to actually have the requirements to see it in the desert from the Penguin Quest, and you have to at least get to some like a cold, and I don't remember the requirements for that, but it's not going to be you're not going to be a new player by the time you get to it. But at the same time, I do get where he's coming from.
Yep, me too.
In that it's completely, it's lore breaking, but at the same time, so is half the game's content, like Solomon's and all this other stuff, all these outfits. It's in good humor, tongue in cheek, but at the same time, we want a little bit of something just to keep the feel there.
Some Like a Cold was 65 fishing, 56 crafting, 50 construction, 50 thieving, and of course, Hunt for Red Rectuber.
So you're not going to be a new player by the time you hit that.
Right.
You'll have a little bit of experience.
So, I mean, like, you know, if you were just running around the desert and say you saw this and it wasn't indeed part of the quest, then sure, that would be a problem. But we got to remember that we're not going to see that. So hopefully that answers that part of the question. Now, if you were actually a character in this and consuming this medieval media and something like this happens, what would you guys think? You know, I think it comes down to the way RuneScape is set, really. Because, like, the works you cite are original, and they wouldn't necessarily have anything like this happen. So, I don't think we'd see anything like that happen. But do you guys think Thieves' question here is saying that if you were a part of this medieval time, or if you were just consuming the media?
If you're consuming the media.
Okay.
I think he's saying, like, if it's that the stuff RuneScape's doing wouldn't fly in Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, which is totally true, but RuneScape's a completely different beast than either of those. It's never taken itself that seriously.
Right.
I mean, there is a box, but I consider it hardly sci-fi myself. I mean, there's this box. It runs on divine energy. It is built, I mean, it might do some electricity, but we have electricity in Dorgesh Khan. We have invention. I feel it's not too far out there. And who knows, maybe this eventually leads to a new track of invention technologies. And it's a fine line. And maybe this is just too far on the side of sci-fi-y. But also, it's still RuneScape, and I mean, they had a submarine. That
would have been content breaking back then too. So, and I mean, then the name of the Hunt for Red Rectuber is the Hunt for Red October. I mean, this
I see
that
where
is
you're
as game breaking as
I,
this, and yeah, me too. I see that too, as well.
That's what I think this things in this quest could be handled better. I think this might be one of them. I think the reference to a blue box was funny, but maybe it went a bit too far. And
yeah,
it's hard. And I think while playing the quest, you can definitely feel that the mods who worked on it tried their best. Like, they put their heart in this. It's
right.
But I mean,
and that leads me to a point I wanted to make, is that if I was a Doctor Who fan and I saw this, I would like this. If I loathed Doctor Who, I would dislike it as well. And it would be like the same thing for me if there was, you know, one of those little friggin' bot things from Star Wars running around that you can't understand in a quest. You know? if I saw one of those in RuneScape, it would be like, why? Why do you need that stupid, incoherent little bot in RuneScape? It makes no sense. Why are you taking RuneScape down to that level? So that's the way I would see that. And on the other side of the coin, I can see someone who was working on this quest, might have been a huge fan of Doctor Who, and wanted to incorporate this as, you know, just like a very fun, personal kind of thing to do.
I mean, it's a bot request, and I would bet money on it that this started as a passion project. And we have to accept that as well.
Right, because that's what February was about, passion projects.
I think it ultimately, this whole issue comes down to the question of, do you want the game to be more serious, as in the lore passive intake with Sliske and everything, or do you want the less serious, more fourth wall breaking stuff?
Right, the original, two kinds of people.
What do you want to see?
And that's a very good way of putting it.
And this quest definitely favors the classic RuneScape.
Yep.
Older, less serious stuff.
And, you know, I think when you put it that way, that's what it comes down to. And you're entirely right on that. So, I mean, yeah, definitely. If you saw something like this and you were consuming that media, you wouldn't want that. But then again, you couldn't see that there. And I mean, I think this perhaps does go a bit far, because you've never seen anything like this in RS as well. So it's teetering on the edge, I think, but it's nowhere near as bad as it could potentially be. I think that sums everything up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Mm-hmm. Sarah, I'll get you to read the last set of questions here from Chodo.
No.
One of them is directed at you.
No.
Do it.
All right. Well, we have questions from Chodo3000, and he has three questions. His first is, I already like the achievement system as it is. Dev Diaries mentioned that this new system would also merge with Comp Max MQC requirements, Master Quest Gate. Do you think this update will be worth it, or do you think we'll find ourselves with almost the same content? His second question is, still haven't done the new quest, but I'll ask anyway. Do you guys think the secret quest is a good change after all those super serious, lore-filled god quests? Or would you prefer more quests like Children of Maw, Nomad's Elegy, or Slisk's Endgame? And I'm not reading three.
Number three says, question for Sierra. When are we seeing more of Spiff E. McSpoffenberg and the Devil's a Loser? I don't know what that refers to, but there you go.
God damn it, Chodo. God damn it, Chodo.
As for number one, I think we're going to have mostly the same content, except with the addition of the pathing things. Obviously, what we were suggesting on the podcast would be nice if we saw, and would depend if they want to work something like that in. But as I understand it right now, it looks like it's going to be just an interface rework on the achievements already.
Yeah, they'll just like kind of reorganize it, it sounds like.
Yeah. Number two. All right, so here, capping off quest week, do you prefer these kind of quests, the old classic RS kind of quests, the less serious, or do you prefer the lore intensive Children of Maw, Elegy, or Endgame?
I'm not gonna lie, if they would go back to just doing RS quests, like these funny quests, I probably wouldn't mind.
Personally, I am a story guy. I prefer a more fleshed out, serious story. I'm a serious story guy, so I kind of like that they're taking the lore more seriously. I would prefer more Children of Maw and all of those, but I can understand the need for the occasional little break back to classic RuneScape.
All right. As for me, I would prefer a majority of these kind of old classic RS quests, because they're just lighthearted, and it's not as though we're going to be spending a huge amount of time invested in trying to figure out exactly, oh, what are the ramifications of this? What are the ramifications of that in these quests? They're just quests, and they're there to have fun with. But with that being said, I also do prefer to have, you know, maybe one or two storylines going at the same time, that we see maybe one or two or three lore-heavy quests per year. I think that would be a sane number.
Can I add on to my answer?
Yeah.
Because I don't mean like everything has to be Children of Maw and Nomad's Elegy, like, oh my God, big, massive events. fond of just, say, Pirate Quest, which is just its own little secluded storyline. I just want to see them continue that one storyline going forward and not just go on random tangents and all that.
Okay. All right.
I just like them seeing that they start a storyline, they see it through. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and definitely that needs to be done, I think, because there are lots of unfinished loose ends in the game. So as long as they're definitely not shooting all over the place, that will be fine, I think. So, and I guess Chodo Sierra does not want to answer this question. So.
All right.
So when?
Devil is a Loser series is a video series I produced a few years ago for RuneScape Machinima.
All right.
It hasn't happened in some time. I'm trying to write more because it's a passion project. Maybe eventually.
Alrighty. And what about Spiffy McSwaffenberg?
Was a character within the series that was a joke and Chodo takes very seriously.
All right. Fair enough.
But if I do continue, you will see it again.
Right on.
Happy Chodo.
I'm sure he's very happy with that. Okay, so if you want to send questions in, email us questions at rsbnb.com or leave us a voicemail, 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. We're also on Twitter at rsbnb, where you can send us at mentions, direct messages, and whatever your heart desires. So, on to tech news we go. This week, we have a security bulletin regarding Android password managers. What is this, Sirion?
All right. So a team called Team SIK, Team SIK, I don't know how you would pronounce it, has it's a security team that looks at apps and exposes vulnerabilities. And last year in, I think, September, they exposed vulnerabilities, 26 of them to be precise, in the 9 most popular Android password manager app. And these apps, to be precisely, are MyPasswords, Informaticore Password Manager, LastPass, Keeper Password Manager, F-Secure Key, Dashlane, Hide Pictures, Keep Safe Vault, Avast Passwords, and 1Password. So some pretty big names in there, especially LastPass and 1Password, I think are used pretty commonly by people to use passwords.
Yeah, most definitely LastPass. That's one we talk about a lot on this show.
Yeah, I use 1Password myself, so I definitely took this announcement seriously. So before you go and grab your phone and delete these apps, these vulnerabilities were shared with the developers last September. Most of them were fixed within a few weeks. So it's generally fine, especially if you use the more like LastPass and 1Password were both very, very serious in taking on these vulnerabilities and fixing them. Most of these problems are usually part of the browser that comes with the app. So if you only use it to fill the passwords in your main browser,
all right,
you probably never really were exposed to any problems.
Versions only, right?
Sorry?
And the Android version, yes. Only.
So issues were generally solved really quickly. So that it's not to the point where passwords were leaked. The only real issues were if you were using the browser in the app, you could have leaked some mostly privacy data. And there were a few things where communication, for example, with vendors was not entirely encrypted, like metadata, for example, might have sent in plain text. So why did I want to include this news post? Not to scare everybody away. It's just, I think if you make a choice of a password app, it's definitely important to look at past vulnerabilities and how the company treated them. I think in general, like the big ones treated this very well. But for example, Avast Passwords took until March 1st to fix all the issues. And
that's not good. That's not good.
No, that takes like half a year, and that's too long to have vulnerability open. I don't know what the exact issue was. They haven't actually published the vulnerabilities that haven't been fixed yet, because they don't want people using it, of course. But definitely always stay aware of like how password apps do. Keep an eye on this news, and if there's a big leak, that's a bad reason. I think both LastPass and 1Password have done security audits, which means that a professional company tries to get the data out of there, and if they really cannot get it, and they deem it safe, then you can be pretty sure that it's done, because those are experts. So this is just more of a heads up, like nothing is completely secure. So
right. It's because it was Android only and the browser that ships with the Android apps. So even if you use these password managers on different platforms, you're fine. It's just more of a PSA, I guess, to keep up on the security updates that your password manager is shipping to you.
Yes, and just don't think that like after choosing a password manager and going with it that you're completely free of keeping up. Like things might change from one day to another, and this is hard. We all would like our perfect wallet-tight storage, but it's hard, and hackers are getting smarter too. Computers are getting faster, so this is an incredibly difficult subject, and I am happy that there's teams like this that expose these vulnerabilities, and I'm happy that these companies take this seriously and fix it as soon as possible generally. But yeah, if you are interested in this, I definitely urge you to check out the link in the show notes and see if the app or apps you use are in there, what the vulnerabilities are, and how they might affect you.
All right, yeah. You know, always shocking when something like this happens. You gotta go, oh, am I safe? Okay, we're safe. So that's just something.
I mean, things like this happens continuously, right?
Right.
Windows vulnerabilities are exposed all the time, and Windows fixes them in the weekly security patches. And we often think that like this is sort of a thing that happens without really noticing it. We just see all these patches coming in all the time. But like, for example, like Google recently exposed a vulnerability in Windows because it wasn't fixed for a while, and that is generally a red flag. And it's hard to keep track of all of these, but like it's always good to keep an eye open for these announcements and always be critical of the applications you use if they are still worth using and if you still feel confident that they can protect your privacy and your data.
Yep, most definitely. All right, now we have a piece of tech news regarding the upcoming Windows 10 update that users will begin to see in a couple of months. It's called the Windows 10 Creators Update. And with this update, Microsoft wants to provide more user control around privacy and update installation. So that is, we'll go back to the, I guess, what would be pre-Windows 10 way of updates, where you can choose the time when they'll be installed and pause them, because right now Windows 10 is pretty vicious with this and that. If it's time to install updates and it thinks you're not using your computer, well, it's time to install updates and your computer will definitely install these. So that's one thing that Microsoft is going to focus on with this. They're also going to be reworking the security panel and privacy panel for when you install Windows, because right now if you choose Express Setup, you get a lot of things turned on that you might not want to have turned on. So when you do a new install of Windows or a new setup of Windows even, you'll be greeted with a screen that has more granular controls on it related around the privacy of location, speech recognitions, diagnostic tips, recommendations, and relevant ads. So you'll basically be able to toggle each of these rather than choosing Express Settings when you're setting up Windows. And, you know, for some reason, I think this was the biggest thing people were upset about with the release of Windows 10. So, you know, just seeing this fixed is, well, not fixed, but in general changed, I think is a good thing to situate some of these people.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like with Windows 10, they became a bit more aggressive at like all these privacy things with updates because they want to keep people up to date. And clearly that has made some people unhappy. And I see where Microsoft is coming from with like forcing these updates out because it keeps people safer. And people tend to just postpone updates because they're annoying. But it's a hard balance to strike. And I personally am happy that we as a user get a bit more control. And in the end, it's our responsibility to keep our system safe.
So. That's right. And I mean, Windows 10 took so much FUD for this when it first came out that it was really unfair by people who were hating on it just because of this. So, I mean, it, you know, this kind of just says to these people, here, we're changing this. Install Windows 10 now. So, Sierra, you have any thoughts on this?
I always get screwed by the auto update. I'm glad. Always. Every time it updates, it's at a bad time.
You know, I never have it be at a bad time, so I guess I'm just really consistent with the way I use my machine. So, all right. Testers will begin to start to see this in early March if you're on the what they call the insider previews for Microsoft, so look out for that. And our final piece of tech news relates to SpaceX announcing that they're going to be sending a privately crewed Dragon spacecraft around the moon by next year. So, Sirion's pretty happy about this. two people have paid SpaceX an undisclosed amount of money for this. They're going to get a round trip around the moon. They're not going to land on the moon, but basically they're going to make that trip out to the moon, and this will happen in 2018, and this will pretty much be the first time that humans have gone this far past the moon since, well, the 1970s. So this is going to be pretty huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, of course, we are seeing monumental changes. Like, SpaceX has changed rocket science. Like, it has changed space travel. The way they land their boosters almost consistently now was the big thing for the past few years. But this year, they're going to do their first crewed space flight to the ISS with the Dragon spacecraft. Next year, they're planning to bring like private, like non-astronauts, basically, like just tourists to space. And that's a first in the world. Like, that is something I had not considered happening for like, a very long time.
It's a very incredible time to be living in.
It's amazing. It's also like for decades we have not even been close to the moon, and then within a few weeks both NASA and SpaceX announced that in 2018 they want to have a program
right.
to visit the moon. So right. NASA actually announced that
by the end of 2019 NASA wants to return people to the moon.
So NASA has the SLS program that will actually put people in orbit around the moon again, if I remember correctly. Right. And SpaceX wants to just go around the moon, but they won't go in orbit. They will just skim by and come straight back. So it's a lot simpler, but it would be the first time that a commercial company sends people to the moon. I think they will go even further out than the Apollo programs did. So they will also send people furthest away from the from Earth ever. So all in all, these are all monumental changes.
Right.
And these can be compared to the huge events of Apollo 11. And I think we should all just appreciate at what time we may be alive and the changes we can see. And I am already looking forward to following these missions, like, probably not completely live, but it's just so exciting to see these things happening and unfolding right before us, and it makes me hopeful of what we can do in the next few decades.
Yeah, and I mean, the initial NASA plan was, like you said, just to orbit the moon, but they're looking at changing that to actually land on the moon as well in 2019. And I mean, that's 2 years, and I mean, we had the technology to do this in the 1970s, so it surely exists today. You know, it's just a matter of will and wanting to aim to something higher and something that can lead to so much more. And the reason this is important, if you don't think space is important, you just need to look. Oh, I almost threw my pen there because I was going to use my pen as an example. You just need to look around your house and see how many things that you have are influenced by that. Velcro fasteners, scotch tape, pens. There's a company in the US, Fisher Space Pen, that designed a pen that was able to be flown specifically and used in a zero gravity environment because, well, pencils, they shed graphite fillings, and anytime you have graphite in the air, that is something that can become flammable with a spark. So the answer was to make a pen that would work inside a zero-G environment. And that those are the kind of things that come from space that not many people realize do, and why, you know, venturing out beyond what is comfortable is so important. That is, venturing beyond the low Earth orbit of the space station currently. So definitely great and stuff happening.
If you feel that you missed out by not living during the Cold War in the space race, this is a little bit of a space race on its own. Like, both NASA and SpaceX wants to go to the moon.
And China.
We are not sure which of them is going to win, and we all know that SpaceX Mars program has been delayed, and that is mostly because there's only very limited possibilities to go to Mars. Like, once every 2 years you can send a ship, basically. And the cool thing with the moon is that you can basically go whenever and just go. So there's not a big chance that the delays will add up to multiple years. Like, it will happen in probably in 2018, otherwise in 2019. So in 2 years we can probably say that people have been to the moon, like close to the moon again.
Yeah. And then of course the next step is a colony on the moon, much like we have a colony in low Earth orbit on the space station, and then take it from there.
Exactly.
All right. So into other things this week, we've wrapped up the February skill of the month, Gem Andy 52. Sorry, I got the name wrong again. That's just the way it rolled out. Got 50, just over 50 million fishing experience gained. Second place was Adiron Cronon with 49 million, and third place was Andur with 42.3 million. Gem Andy 52 took over the lead of Touchpad Pro Adiron Cronon on the last day of this competition to take the victory, as Touchpad Pro had flatlined at the end there. So that was a nice thing to see. And as the month has just started in March, we do have the thieving skill of the month underway for March, which currently has some interesting results. 5.4 million XP in first place, 1.5 million second, and 1 million XP in third place. So it should be interesting to see where that one goes.
Yeah, thieving can go really fast if you really put your heart into it.
Oh, yeah. Especially
that can have some scary high...
Especially XP with numbers. with all the options out there, with dwarves, crystallize, the crystal mask, you name it, everything, auras, exoskeleton, lots of stuff to boost thieving. So it'll be very interesting to watch. Okay, so we do have some achievements of the week here. We'll start off by me going through some of them, and then Sierra, and then Sirion. We'll take the rest of them in that order. So first up this week, going back all the way to March 1st, we have Xenon Ray with 99 fire making, Parnassius with 120 thieving, Chota 3099 mining, Colton 99 farming, and Jesse Pinkman 99 invention on the 28th of February. Isthmus 99 invention on the 28th as well. Undoer, 200 million fishing XP. Tasty Romeo, 99 strength. Colton, 99 invention. Tasty Romeo again with 99 attack and magic on the 27th. And Tasty Romeo again with 99 farming on the 26th of February. All right. Sierra, you're up next.
Well, on February 26th, we had Sid Rains, who got 99 woodcutting. I Like Slayer, who got 99 magic. Mama Mystic, who got 99 defense. Tycho Elf got 120 invention and 120 dungeoneering. Our very own Sirion got 99 attack and strength. And Tasty Romeo, yet again, got 99 ranged on February 26th.
Good job.
On February 25th, Tasty Romeo also got 99 woodcutting. Xenon got 99 agility, also on February 25th. And then on February 24th, we got Desmo 360 with 99 fishing, Xenon Ray with 99 woodcutting, Snow Queen 303 with 99 mining, and finally, again, Tasty Romeo with 99 mining.
Good Romeo is overpowered.
Yeah, definitely.
Romeo actually got the most experience during the double XP weekend of all of
Clank
Quest, if I remember correctly. He totally obliterated it.
And this is, I guess, what we're seeing here, the aftermath of that, then.
Probably.
He just beat Catmac, who had 1 million XP less. The two of them just went hard.
That's a lot, 1 million XP. Still is.
Yeah, but the third place, Solus, was at 33 million total. So there's a significant gap there.
Yep. All right. What do you got for pick of the week this week, Sirion?
So this, I'm going to pick a week. I have a pick of the week that is already pretty old. But I had it on my list since I was co-host previously. And this is a nice moment to actually bring it up again. Because the game I want to discuss is Cities Skylines, which is a city building game. And probably the spiritual successor to SimCity, more so than the SimCity game that came out a couple of years ago, which was not received very well. City Skylines just filled that gap really well. Ever since it came out, I have picked it up at several occasions. Just going back to it, it's a really solid city building game. And since its release, it has gotten several DLC, and every time a DLC is released, several features are actually also added as free update to the base game. So it's still actively supported, even I think it's about 2 years after its release now, but don't quote me on that. And very recently, actually last week, they actually announced a new DLC, which is Mass Transit, which will add, if I remember correctly, ferries, monorail, air, like these ski lift things, and I think those are it. Like, they will add new transportation methods to the game. And if you are into city building at all, you should definitely pick up this game. There's plenty of things to do. There's interesting DLC to pick up depending on the kind of stuff you like to do. It has Steam Workshop integration, and there is so many mods that can change the game, and the support for it is great. So if you are into city building games at all, or simulation games, definitely take a look at it. If you were put off by SimCity, I totally understand that. This actually is a good game. So just a shout out to that. And if you picked it up a while ago and are not aware, there's actually a new DLC coming in a couple of weeks, months.
All right, and it looks like you can find it on Steam, so that's good.
Yes, you can find it on Steam. I think that's the main way of getting it, because it's tight integration with the Steam Workshop.
All righty, sounds good. So that's City Skylines. Link will be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So what have we been up to this week? Let's start with you, Sarah.
Oh, what have I been up to? I've been churning my herb lore a lot.
Oh, good.
That's what I've mostly been doing.
What are you going for?
99.
Oh, fun. Yeah, it's always...
I got 97 in the middle of this podcast.
All right. It's been a while since anyone AFK'd on the show, but I think we can allow that.
I've been doing that and just working on some personal projects on the side.
Okay, sounds good. How about you, Sirion?
So last weekend, I got 99 attack and strength. I was doing my normal combat task. I don't particularly enjoy it, so I tried to chip away a bit every day. I felt I was getting really close to maxing my combat, and I felt it was a bit slow, so I asked around and got pointed at the abyss. And after 2 hours of doing it wrong, I found out there's actually a way of doing it right, which gives a lot of XP, and I just crunched my way to the rest of it. So I'm now at the point where the only thing left for the max cape is invention, and I'm currently 98 invention, which means I'm less than 1 million XP away from that shiny cape. So
very nice.
Really
looking forward to
that.
The invention skill cape perk.
Sorry?
Looking forward to the invention skill cape perk?
I am pretty sure that will be one of the three perks I will put on my max cape. Yeah, it's just a general money saver and effort saver, I suppose. I don't know yet about the other two, but we'll see about that. The biggest problem I have right now is that multiple people seem to be maxing or comping in our clan, so I'm having a hard time picking a date for a party. That's my main concern right now. But yeah, like probably in 2 weeks or something, I'll get that cape, and then we'll see what we start doing after that.
All right, sounds good to me.
Are you still doing your race, Sirion? You were having a max race.
I was having a max race. I lost. But we already stopped doing the bat because neither of us was having any time. So I got away with that.
For shame.
I wasn't racing with you.
Not you.
Oh.
Okay. I said for shame.
Oh, okay.
Shame.
Enunciate that M better then. All right. Well, as for me then, this week, I have also been training a bit of Herb Lore, except rather than purchasing things, I've been farming my own Ranner herbs, which, you know, you don't expect someone with 99 farming to be farming Ranner, but I am. Also farming Snapegrass, so the plan is to have the prayer potions from that and then purchase the prayer renewal potions and then make the combination potion and hopefully save some money doing that. So that's my way of doing Herb Lore currently. But beyond that, I'll just say to remind everyone to check your Oyster because the first of the month just happened and you can get some pretty steep treasure trail rewards there if you are lucky at the Oyster at the old tutorial island place underwater. So make sure you check that. I don't think there's anything else that I need to mention in particular. There is a new Informer roundup up at informer.rsbnb.com about the double XP aftermath that we had in February and all the Informer articles that we put together. So you can read that at informer.rsbnb.com. Full show notes at update.rsbnb.com are available. So with that being said, I think we're done. Anyone have anything else?
We survived.
All right. Well, taking that as a no, then we will see you guys next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
See ya.
Bye.